Hi, I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and this is Eye on Careers. Tonight, we look at what it takes to be successful. And I can promise you that tomorrow morning, the alarm will go off and the vast majority of us will hit the snooze button, while a select cadre will end up getting up before the sun rises to chase their dreams. What is it that possesses these people? What drives them? Why is it some of us find success while others simply keep pace with the herd? To many, financial success includes luxury cars, large houses, perhaps even private jets. To many, these items are the acme of success. But I disagree. After interviewing over 500 CEOs and self-made millionaires, I've been to their offices, I've been to their homes, I've met their families. I know their stories, and I disagree. Success does not look like a giant house in Emirates Hills, a yacht in the marina, or a private jet. If you want to know what success looks like a person who's left bankrupt and homeless, only to rise up and take the podium in the second greatest act of their life. Success looks like that person sleeping on the floor, abandoned by everything except their dreams, refusing to give up. And if you want to know success, then I would say first, you need to be acquainted with failure, because I haven't met a single person who knows greatness who has not known failure. I don't know a single person who knows the light that doesn't know the darkness. In fact, most of your dreams are born in that darkest moment. The seeds of your finest hour are often planted in your darkest. Steve Jobs, fired from his own company. Bruce Henderson, founder of the Boston Consulting Group, was fired from every job he ever had. And when he died, the Financial Times said debatably, no other person had such an impact on the paradigm of business thought of the 21st century. Not bad for someone who couldn't hold a job down. So if you're being knocked down, if you're surrounded by darkness, if you've been laid off, fired, or your career seems to be going up in flames all around you, or maybe you were like Steve Jobs and got fired from your own company, I'd like to congratulate you, because you've taken your first few steps towards success. And the truth is, many people can't see past the big house, the big car, the yacht, or the private jet. They don't see your darkest moments. The truth is, if you want something others don't have, you have to be willing to do what others will not. And tonight, we find out what it takes to make it to the top of the education game. We have three of the biggest principals, heads of the education business, in the studio with us right now. It's a panel. We've got Paul West, the Chief Executive Officer and Executive Principal of GEMS Wellington Academy, Al Khail. We have Jason McBride, head of school at GEMS World Academy, and Christopher McDermott, principal, CEO of GEMS Jumeirah Primary School. These gentlemen have all made it to the top of their professions, and we're going to look at what it takes to make it. So this is going to be one interesting panel, and I just want to thank you all for listening. I hope you find some tidbits that help you move towards your goal or towards your dream. I'd just like to open the panel now. Jason, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Oh, thank you very much.
Maybe you could just quickly just give us a little blurb so the audience can maybe get a little bit of familiarity with your background. I know that you're a bit of an internet star, TEDx speaker and all, so maybe you can give us a background on that.
Sure. I think working overseas in international education, especially in Dubai over the past 14 years, you come to associate with a level of excellence. We're always pushing the envelope, and being a TED speaker, being a head of school, the best you can, is about passion and drive. And Dubai has allowed for me to be a part of three new school starts and sort of explore that drive the same way that TED did. So I'm glad to be here tonight talking about that.
You're also a fellow Canadian, so welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Paul West, Chief Executive Officer and Executive Principal of GEMS Wellington Academy. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, thank you. Good evening. I'm happy to be here. I'm relatively new to Dubai. I joined GEMS in January of this year as CEO and executive principal of the Academy GEMS Wellington Academy Al Kyle. We are a new and growing academy, a British curriculum academy, and I joined following a career in the UK leading and developing schools and working in the inspection service and consultancy service for the Department of Education.
Thank you so much. And Christopher McDermott, Principal CEO of GEMS Jumeirah Primary School.
You know, you've got Christopher McDermott, Executive Principal, GEMS Jumeirah Primary School, waving at you because you know he's not doing that job anymore.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
So I was the principal of GEMS Jumeirah Primary School. I was there for 3 years, and we managed to, I'm very proud to say, get outstanding each of the 3 years I was there in terms of inspection. And I've now moved on, so I'm the new principal of GEMS International School on the Alkale Road. So I've moved from a British background and joined you guys a little bit and become more international. I felt I needed to become more Canadian.
Oh, there you go. Well, excellent. Well, thanks again for all of you for coming. And, you know, I want to know, you know, what does it really take? You know, what's the difference between that individual who maybe stays as a teacher their whole career, and some people want to stay at that? You know, success is defined on individual terms. It doesn't necessarily mean getting to the top of your profession, but for those people who do want to rise up to that, you know, what does it take? And one thing I noticed, not only when I look at your careers, but if you even do a research of the top highest paid CEOs in the world or the top highest paid CFOs in the world, one thing that you really find is a focus on a particular industry. That individuals who get to that acme of success in their profession have generally been in the same industry for over 20, 25 years. I don't know if any of you individuals feel that it's important to have that type of focus in order to rise into a senior leadership role.
I think it's important to have focus, absolutely, and determination. And I think for me, personally, it's about challenge, and we just had a little conversation to start there, and we talked about the fact that I was at Jumeirah Primary School. I've now moved. Jumeirah Primary School was a British curriculum school, so I understood it very well. We were outstanding. I hope the school will be outstanding again next year. So why does one move? Well, I've moved for the same reason as these two guys have moved and been successful. It's because of the challenge. Can I do it? And I don't want to look back when I get to a ripe old age and think, well, I could have done this and I could have done that, but I wasn't brave enough. So you're going to take it on. And what's the worst thing that can happen to you? The worst thing that can happen to you is your ego's damaged a bit. Apart from that, you know, you go to a place, you take on a challenge, you don't succeed, but hey, you're a bigger person for it because you were brave enough to go for it.
Paul, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with it. And I also think in terms of being grounded in the industry which you work, for me, one important thing as you progress through your career is what I call the apprenticeship model, which is essentially making sure that you've done all of the jobs that are necessary for you to understand how your industry sector or organization works. So in a school, that would be classroom teacher, it could be head of subject, it could be head of year, assistant principal, deputy principal, up to principal. So actually when you do have the privilege of running your own school, you understand what the colleagues you are working with have been through and experienced in their role at that time. I think as well as also being grounded in your own industry, I think certainly in education, we have a lot to look sideways at in terms of healthcare, banking, the charitable sector, in terms of how they're structured and how they develop productivity from their employees and results from their clients, our clients being students. And I think as well as knowing your own self, knowing your own industry, it's important to have peripheral vision and make sure that you actually are open to those influences from other sectors.
And James?
I know for me, you know, I didn't set out when I moved into education after university to become a head of school necessarily. But I think having been coaching and working with children, it was a natural evolution. My mom is in education, so the apples don't fall far from the tree usually in education. But I didn't start out to want to be a head of school, but I think for me it was about working with a small group of children and then working as a specialist and seeing that influence grow and, you know, being, I guess, having a healthy enough sense of ego that having more of an impact on a larger group of kids was felt like a good thing, felt like a good use of my time, I guess. And as I rose into being an assistant principal and a principal and leading bigger and bigger schools and newer projects, just having that influence on people is what drove me to sort of express my passion. And now I find myself, the head of a great IB school with almost 2,100 kids, and having that influence on a daily basis on a bigger group of kids. So it started from a very natural passion working with children, and you just kind of find your niche. And I suppose all of us have found that in leading large schools and large communities of people.
Isn't it a bit of intellectual arbitrage, though, as you continue to stay in one industry? And of course, maybe it wasn't how you set out. I mean, obviously, Chris, as you talk about it, it wasn't like a grand design. You're literally going from one challenge to the next. But as you move through these challenges, you build up a body of knowledge within that industry. So when you face a problem, you face a business issue in that industry, you have the full gamut of experience and what you refer to, Paul, as the apprenticeship model, that this allows you to solve problems faster, quicker, gives you that insight that someone who doesn't have the industry exposure would lack.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, what's interesting to me is that whether you work in education or not, obviously you're always working with people. Human nature doesn't change. Cultures change. The way people express themselves changes due to the cultural expectations. But basic human nature, it seems to me, doesn't change. So whether you're working in a school or you're working in the health service, Paul was talking about the health service, or wherever, you will get those same group dynamics, the same needs from the people, etc., etc. And I think for me, even though I've spent virtually the whole of my life in education, I've worked in so many different types of schools that it's not just a different experience because you're moving up the hierarchy. It's a different experience because you're moving into a different type of school. So now, like the other two guys, I work in a private sector school. I started my life as a head teacher in England, in London, working in a very deprived school where nearly 50% of the children were on free school meals. So you're not just learning a new job in the sense of moving up the hierarchy. You're learning a new job because you're dealing with a different type of clientele.
And Paul?
I think also in terms of that and in the development of teachers through their career working with different clientele, I think there's a sequential development. Teachers trained to be teachers, and they train to be great teachers and work in a classroom for 30 hours a week and teach children, assess and mark work, feedback, build relationships with parents. School principals have to understand teaching, finance, facilities management, HR, and a range of other associated skills connected with leading a large organization. You don't gain those skills in teacher training college. You gain those as you progress through your career in a sequential way as you pick up additional roles. And I think if I look back 20 years ago when I first went into the classroom, the skills that I use now on a day-to-day basis in running the school are very, very different to the ones that I went into my first classroom to teach children with.
Absolutely, I'd agree totally with that. I mean, and now, it's interesting, our job titles, I think they're all the same. We're principal stroke CEO. Mm-hmm. And that CEO part, so you're looking, as Paul says, at the financial model, you're looking at the marketing, you're looking at the premises, so you might be dealing with a drain pipe 1 minute, and then you're dealing with a marketing video the next minute, hopefully still not with the drain pipe in your hand, But that's it. It's the variety of the job, and I couldn't say that you could ever get anywhere near being bored. I mean, because of that variety.
I agree. It's the width of the skill set that it requires to run the school. And, when you're in teacher training and you're talking about relationship and rapport and those interpersonal skills, that's the piece that continues along. The pedagogy piece, the teaching and learning continues along. But it's all those other parts that Paul's talking about. It's the legal, the marketing, the facilities that stretches and challenges us. I agree 100%. The other thing I think about education is I think there's a very specific gravity about the education business. And I've seen it because most of my friends outside of the educational sphere that work in business have a different driver. And once you're motivated by working with kids and you put in your 50, 60-hour weeks as a head of school, it's tough to step away from education and go into something else, I think, despite the skill set being applicable to business, because we're working with kids. And everything that we do, all the skills that we need, all the problems we need to solve, change the experience of children the next day. And so as hard as we work, kids' lives are changing. It's not just changing the profit, the bottom line on a company selling widgets. We're changing kids' lives. And so I think that's a different driver that people don't always experience outside of education. So you don't get a lot of people switching out of education necessarily.
No.
Same way you get them switching in other industries, perhaps.
Yeah. And for me, you know, and it's a cliche, and people are going to be listening to this and go, oh, yawn, you know, I've heard all that stuff before. But it's absolutely true. I wouldn't swap my job for any other job in the world. It is absolutely fantastic. And it's because you are there working with your staff, working with your parents, working with your children, trying to build a culture. And you are changing children's lives. Now, I don't know about the other two guys, but I've known lots of people who've come into education in their late 30s, in their 40s. They've worked in the financial sector, maybe in London or something like that. They've made lots of money, and it hasn't been fulfilling for them. So they've come into education, and they've loved it. And, of course, they've been very successful for all the reasons that, say, Paul was talking about in terms of the skill set, because they've got those management of people skills or whatever it is, and they bring those with them to the education system, and they progress very quickly.
The role of leading a school is exceptionally satisfying, although you are never satisfied.
Mm-hmm. No.
And if you accept the principle that getting better never stops,
it's never done.
You're never going to be satisfied in the role, are you?
Well, this is Eye on Careers, and we are looking at what it takes to be successful in the education sector. These are universal themes which will transcend any career path. Coming up, we're going to look at the role of purpose, finding your why in your job. And I want to send a big thank you out to the ICAEW, the Institute of Chartered Accountants of England and Wales, for sponsoring the show and allowing us to bring this forward. We're also coming up going to be looking at roles in the professions and careers in the accounting profession. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is Eye on Careers. Executive CV.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. We are looking at what it takes to make it in the education industry. And funny enough, you know, these success principles are universal. I don't think it really matters whether you're in education, in banking, in sales, in manufacturing. These principles kind of run rampant throughout every career path. And we are here talking with Paul West, who's the CEO and executive principal of GEMS Wellington Academy. Paul, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
We're also here with Jason McBride, head of school at GEMS World Academy.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Christopher McDermott, who is the new principal of GEMS International School. Chris, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
So I got it right this time.
You got it right. Well done.
I thought
the Canadians are learning.
I thought you were going to throw your pen at me. So
I would have done, but I would probably have missed. So, hey.
You know, I think just for those catching up to the program here, one of the things we just covered was that all these gentlemen are kind of at the top of their game. They've all been in industry in their industries for their entire career. So we're talking about decades of experience, and that's something that carries through every industry. Generally, people have, you know, more than 15, 20 years of experience before they really start to maximize their ability to contribute to an organization. The other thing that, you know, I think is really important is the sense of purpose, and that was kind of a subtext of the discussion you guys were having, that it's not really what you do or how you do it or you know, what your title is or what your salary is. It's really that sense of value, that sense of purpose that you're contributing to society. And I don't know, maybe we can just go around the rooms, starting with Jason, and you can just touch on that point. You know, what, you know, to what level does a sense of purpose actually play into your success in a career?
I think it's tremendously important. I think finding that driver, it doesn't matter whether it's building widgets as an engineer, whether it's helping people through medicine, or whether you find it through education and watching children and young adults grow academically and as human beings. You have to find that driver, because that's what you're going to link to. That's what's going to bring out your passion and really have you
co-create and sell a vision of what you're trying to create at your school. So I think until you're honest with yourself, it doesn't matter. It's not like I believe everybody has to be an educator, but if that's your thing, if that's what really gets you excited, just working with kids and seeing them grow, then that's what leads to success, because you're in it. It's no longer work. It really is a vocation. And it sounds cliche, but it's no longer a job. It slides into that cliche almost of it being a calling, because you have to do it. You're morally obligated to be better at it the next day, and that's what breeds success.
Well, I think it's not just people in education that feel this calling, because I think unfortunately the late Joan Rivers, who recently passed, she said, you don't do this for the money, or she used your exact words. She said, it's a calling. We've been created to make people laugh, to bring joy into people's lives. Right. This was her sense of purpose. Or you look at the media guy who's reporting from a volatile war zone. NBC, I think, has lost 18 staff members in volatile zones. And they said, our job is so important. We bring this news to the people. We're willing to die for this, and then you have the extreme case of Doctors Without Borders, do you think that that's the kind of fire in your belly that you should have for your career? Paul, do you think that purpose needs to be that deep?
There is for sure. Certainly in education, and certainly for principals, and I know a lot of other sectors, a moral purpose in terms of people that want to lead, a moral purpose which is about making a difference, about having wider influence. And one of the fantastic things in education is that you can choose where you apply that. Mm-hmm. So for me, I made an emotional connection to the values and morals that were offered by GEMS Education, and I was privileged enough to choose to come and work over here in Dubai and work for our company. And I think that's important, because it isn't about the salary, it isn't about the accolades and recognition. It isn't about being invited onto a radio show to be able to talk about what success you've had or how well you do.
That was one of your drivers this week.
That was one of my drivers.
Was it?
Yeah, definitely. The reason I joined education in the first place was to come in to this showroom.
To Ion Careers.
Yeah. To be here.
There is,
on
of
this
course,
day.
Moral purpose less and immoral purpose as well in some corners. But it's very much about making a connection with the school that you want to lead and the community that you want to be part of. And in schools, you are very much a community.
Yeah, I just pick up on that. It's very interesting. Because for me, a lot of what we do is instinctive. And when I did my MBA dissertation, I did it on leadership and emotional intelligence, because I guess that's what interests me. I do parts of the job that I don't find so interesting, and I hope nobody's listening to this, but for example, is anybody listening to this?
There is, but I didn't know MBAs had emotional intelligence. I didn't.
Well, I don't know. Anyway, this one, they said this
was cutting-edge research.
Yeah, cutting-edge research. But the interesting parts, I suppose, are the parts to do with the people. And when I left my last school, Jumeirah Primary School, and I'm going back to what I said about being instinctive, people said to me, well, how do you know you're going to like it in your new school? How do you know you're going to settle? And I didn't talk about systems. I didn't talk about budgets. I didn't talk about curricula. I talked about falling in love with the place. And that sounds an odd thing to say, but that's what it feels like to me. And I can see Jason over there nodding. And I guess you fall in love with the place when you walk in and you meet your first group of parents or first group of staff, or you say hello to the kids or whatever, and they say, hello, Mr. Chris or Mr. McDermott, and you feel that warmth from them, and you think, yeah, that's why I'm doing the job. And I felt brokenhearted when I left my last school, but now I feel almost reborn, and it's because of the people and that sense of moral purpose. And I think it's an instinctive thing. It's not something which is cold and about systems. Jason, you're nodding there.
Yeah, I would agree. I'd add on that and touch back on what Paul said, which is, when heads are choosing a position, they have to align with the values and the mission and the feel of that community. Mm. And even though there's an intangibility to the feeling of what a community is like, when you find it, the same way as when parents come in to do a tour, we inevitably hear it felt like the right place to be. It felt like a good school. It felt like where we wanted to have our family. And it's no different from a career perspective. You feel that when you go in and you interview and you're looking to join a community, to lead that community. It has to be a value fit, a mission fit, as well.
Do you feel that, you know, many executives, you know, they just lost, they've lost the, you know, the core values? And I think the MBAs, and that's why I was making a joke of the emotional intelligence, that they teach everything except this value that, you know, I was interviewing a guy, he wanted to make the next step into becoming a CFO. And I was like, well, why do you want to be a CFO? And he's like, well, I've done this. And it's the next progression, versus when I look at the actual leaders, whether they're the real CFOs or yourselves, it's that I can make a value contribution to this organization. And the best way I can do that is through the financial strategy. Or the best way I can make a contribution to this community is by running this school. Or the best way is by being a good headhunter, whatever it is that you do.
But you're talking about teaching it. I don't think you can teach it. I had an interesting experience couple of months ago. I'm a member of a little group called Café Scientifique, which I enjoy, and we go down to a local cafe and talk about scientific things. And as one might expect
scientific
from the title,
things.
Yes, it's scientific things. Yeah, there's a bit of French influence there. That's to make you Canadians feel at home. Yeah. So we went down to that, and before I was taking part in a debate, and the debate is about whether or not we should go and populate Mars. And before the debate, most of the people I spoke to thought, yeah, this was a good idea. But what I did was, when I stood up and I spoke about how it would feel if you lost somebody because they went to live on Mars and they did never come back. And what happened was that people bought into the emotional side. And I think for all human beings, the power of our emotions is far greater than the power often of our rational thought.
So now we'll never be on Mars thanks to what you did.
Yeah, we'll be in the studio instead.
it is, I think. And do you think that maybe leaders today and employees, you know, that they're not using and tapping into that emotional piece of our existence to drive your career? And I think in some MBAs, they do what I call MBA-itis, that they teach you just to run roughshod on the mechanics of business, of your business plans, to identify opportunities and not really listen to that inner voice, that fire within.
I think there's a danger that you can get swallowed by the system, and the system drags you in, and the intention is to climb the system and go up and up and up. And in somewhere in that, you can lose the sense of working with the people, your colleagues. Mm. If you accept that part of the role of a leader is to develop other people, and that we develop our organizations by growing the people within it, and by doing that, we have to think about how our behavior makes other people feel. How do we motivate? How do we keep them challenged? How do we make them want to come back to work tomorrow? And we need to check ourselves from time to time to make sure that we're not being swallowed by the system.
Yeah. Well, we're just coming up on our time here, so what would be your last, if I just go through all three of you, I'll start with James, what would be your piece of advice to anyone who's pursuing a career in the education profession? What would be your takeaway, elevator pitch, advice to them to go for gold?
I think you have to genuinely like looking or working with little people or young adults. I think if you don't have that intimate connection to why you're doing it, you're not going to be as good as the person who does, because it's not about the mechanics of pedagogy. You have to genuinely like being there with kids, because that's what kids feed off of. They can see right through people who are going through the motions, as we all did when we had teachers who didn't seem to be there because they loved it, but because it was a good pension at the end of the year, you know? So.
If you want to grow and be part of growing others as well, always have a mentor and always have a protege.
Yeah, and for me, it's about believing. And we were all involved last weekend in a GEMS function, and we had a couple of kids from my old school stood up and spoke to the whole audience of new teachers, you know, the hundreds of teachers there, and they spoke with passion and conviction. And I said, after they spoke, they sat down, I stood up and I said, they have inspired me, the other way around. And I think for me, that's what it's about. Always that sense of belief, and always those interpersonal connections, whether it's with adults or it's with children. And that's what drives you. And that's what keeps you going, even when maybe you should stop.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for coming out on the show. I think we could easily do 4 or 5, maybe even 8 hours, given the fact that you are, in one sense, professional orators. And I think you can actually find some of our guests out on YouTube, TEDx speakers and YouTube sensations here who've taken a moment to share a bit of insight on their way to the top. And I want to thank you, gentlemen, so much for coming out this episode.
Pleasure. Yeah,
thank you.
Pleasure.
That was Paul West, the Chief Executive Officer and Executive Principal of GEMS Wellington Academy, James McBride, the Head of School at GEMS World Academy, and Christopher McDermott, the new Principal of GEMS International School.